Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, we're headed to Boisman, Montana to speak to the folks behind Lockhorn Cidery. And one little factoid you should know about Boisman that you may not have considered before when you're thinking, well, where should I go on my next cider trail? Boisman is only 8 miles outside of Yellowstone National Park. Talk about a cider bucket list to put on your map today. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. I cannot believe it, but we are now 5 episodes away from the 300th episode of Cider Chat, which is just mind-boggling to me. And as such, I've been trying to put this into context for me as I go through this mind-boggling scene. I thought, well, why don't we just begin this episode going back a little bit to season one of Cider Chat. And back then, I was just using every little music clip I could get out of GarageBand and integrating that into my introduction. And that's really was the beginning work of learning how to produce a podcast and playing with sound. And I just really dug this one. So let me share this with you right now. And check it out.
Hi, this is Nat West of Reverend Nat's Hard Cider in Portland, Oregon. And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 30.
Portland, Oregon. Hard cider.
I recorded that intro back in 2016 on my way to CiderCon. It was being held in the city. And I must say that that little intro has been living rent-free in my brain ever since. It's just something about it, the music probably. And that's been really important to me all along, all these years later. Back then, I was using every free lick I could off of the GarageBand music loops. And then once folks started donating and I could basically afford it, you know, from the donations to Cider Chat via the magnificent patrons to this here podcast, all the amazing listeners, because this is listener-supported podcasting, I was able to buy into a program where I could use music royalty-free. And I thought that would kind of level up the game for cider, to really showcase cider as something more than, you know, let's just talk about it, you know, like a little quick talk about it, but really scale it up. Like, this is significant. It should have music. It should have good media. It should have a strong presence in the world. And if nobody else is doing it, then shoot, I'm going to do that. Because why not? I feel it's an emotional experience when you taste something, you pair cider with food. That impacts me. That creates a memory that is long lasting. And then I tell people, I tell my family, I tell my friends, and I want to share that. And to me, that's what life is about. So that's a little bit of the roots of the music piece of Cider Chat is all these years later is really making it be an experience. Your time here with me now, I know that's precious. And I won't deny you nor deny myself of our precious time. So we are on a voyage, aren't we? Yeah, and it's a good one, filled with lots of cider. All right, I'll be right back. It is now my pleasure to talk about the Northwest Cider Club, which is sponsoring this here podcast. In this last quarter of 2021, they are featuring Big Sky Ciders. That's from the states of Idaho and Montana, with one special cider from Bauman Cider in Oregon. And you'll be hearing about that at a later episode. But suffice to say, Christine Walters brought in McIntosh from Montana. Anywho, let's go over to Glenn Deal of Lockhorn Cider, who you'll be hearing from very shortly, with he and his wife, Anna Deal, who are the folks behind Lockhorn Cidery, as he shares with us a little bit about the two ciders that you would get in the Discover Box.
We've included two ciders. The one cider is the Foresight Bittersweet. It's delicately blended with bittersweet apples. And I think of it as a wonderful convergence of American and European flavors. That's a perfect one for people to taste and enjoy. And then the other is represents that Montana fruit, and that's the Montana Macintosh cider. And so 100% heirloom grown Macintosh apples, reds and blacks, from the Bitterroot Valley. We feel really fortunate to be able to get our hands on these Montana grown fruits because they are very rare and they're hard to get a hold of. And fortunately, we have great partners in the state that make them available to us. We have a great time with it because it, as a single varietal and a Montana grown product, we get to see the variation between seasons in the fermentation and the final, the finished product. And so that it's always very exciting. And you think you have these controls as a, you know, as a cider maker, and you can do these, and there's tricks. Obviously there are tricks so that you end up with something very consistent, but the inconsistency is just as exciting, I think, as a reflection of that fruit, that season. And so I think our Macintosh cider is an example of that, a great example of that.
Oh, I tried Lockhorn Cider's Macintosh, and I want to tell you, it was absolutely delicious, fantastic. And it's super exciting for me out on the East Coast to be able to get a sense of what the Macintosh can do in Montana. I'm so stoked for this little apple that has kind of gotten a bum rap in a way to finally get its place in cider. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It may be originally from Canada, but we are all still North American. Look, if you, like me, love what you're hearing from Montana and Idaho and that little place in Oregon, that little rogue place, do go to nwciderclub.com/podcast. And order your box today. Get on their mailing list. You know this is going to sell out. Absolutely.
Walking through the orchards.
As mentioned earlier, this year's podcast is listener supported. So besides having sponsors like nwciderclub.com/podcast, we have folks out there in Ciderville who are jazzed about Cider Chat, getting value, and willing to listen through a whole hour. So they want to keep the podcast on the air, and I really appreciate that. So as such, we have an email in from Ben, and he writes, "Hi, Rhea. I've been really enjoying keeping up with your podcast ever since I came across your episodes with Arnold about my favorite fruit tree, Sorbus domestica. I was delighted to hear you mention the tree again. I wanted to let you know that Sorbus domestica, aka service tree, seedlings are now available through Burnt Ridge Nursery, the small orchard and mail order nursery where I work. We're out here in Washington State, but the trees can be shipped to all 50 U.S. states. The nursery specializes in rare and unusual fruit and nut trees, so it didn't take too much convincing on my part for us to start growing Sorbus domestica for inclusion in this year's catalog." And Ben shared a little link here, and I'm definitely going to be putting this in the show notes to this here episode, and I'll be holding it for my eventual pages on Sorbus domestica. I promise, I'll get that. Anyways, he continues with, "I'm really excited to make these trees more widely available, especially to people with orchards and cideries, in the hopes that they will continue to gain appreciation for food, medicine, and especially in fermented form. I especially appreciate your inclusion of diverse palm fruits in your cider discussions. The episodes about quince have been inspiring, and the 100% quince cider I recently tried from Art and Science in Oregon was consciousness expanding." Oh, so right on. What Kim and Dan do there, they're just awesome people. Everything they make is fantastic. "Thank you for all the work you're doing, and especially for helping bring such a forgotten species such as Sorbus domestica to wider attention. I particularly enjoy the talking palms, but can't help wondering if there are talking quints and medlars, how long can it be until talking sorbs join you in the cider house? And what does a sorb sound like when it speaks? Well, Ben, you know, I mean, the only sorbus domesticas I've met have been from France and the Czech Republic. And as such, well, those talking sorbs had a French accent and a Czech accent. And I'm sure eventually they will get on the podcast one way or another. But, you know, they like to socially distance, and our cider house is a little, you know, it's a little packed. I mean, truthfully, each palm has, you know, their own special accent, if you will. Because, I mean, you have a peri pear, but there's all different kinds of peri pears, and we haven't even yet to explore all the different qualities of being, shall we say. Obviously, I could go on and on about the talking palms.
Rhea?
Yes, Mr. Quince.
We could make room for a sorbus domestica.
I know, Mr. Quince, but when I say they socially distance, it's not because of COVID. It's just that they're known to have, you know, the desire to have a lot of space between them and other trees. You know that, right?
Indeed we do, Rhea. We have all been taking care of the sorbus domestica seedlings with the hopes of putting them in the orchard next year.
You're absolutely right, Peri Pear. You all have been doing a tremendous job with the little baby sorbus domesticas. And I'm not a pom, so you are the experts on this. And I know when the time comes, you will invite a sorbus domestica in and we'll have a conversation. So I look forward to that.
Indeed, Rhea, indeed.
Shall we move on?
Yes, Mr. Quince, that'd be lovely. And I just want to once again say thank you to Ben. Thank you for the work that you do with trees and certainly the sorbus domestica and becoming a patron of Cider Chat. And to everyone else out there in Ciderville, if you find value in this podcast, well, we would welcome you at the Cider Chat Patreon page, or just hit the donate button at ciderchat.com. And I'll tell you, those talking palms, they really get their little stems up there, don't they?
We can hear you, Rhea.
I know, Peri Pear. I'm only joking.
Indeed.
Anyways, look, we're now going to go to Lockhorn Cidery, which is based out in Boisman, Montana. And we're going to be hearing from both Glenn Deal and Anna Deal, the founders and owners of this wonderful little cidery. And I really want to recommend that you check out their website. I thought it was absolutely lovely. And it gives an essence of what you could expect in the product. When you go to a website and it really tells you the flavor of what's happening there, they really deliver. And the cool thing about their cidery, well, there's a lot of cool things, and you're going to hear about that, but they have a green roof on top of the cidery. So they're incorporating a lot of elements to the experience, if you will. They have a small production room that is behind the main tasting rooms, and then they have a canning system up on the second floor, and it just worked that way. They elevate the cans up or the juice up and can it up there, and somehow they pull it all together. And I'm sure not too far in the distant future we'll be hearing how they're expanding. But in the meanwhile, let's all grab a glass and head to this chat with Anna and Glenn Deal of Lockhorn Cider as they tell us a little bit about their backstory and getting into this trade.
Well, I always laugh, you know, that I wanted to go to Montana State University and learn to be a tree farmer. And then life sort of takes you a different direction. And then you wind up where you thought you should be. My husband, Glenn, went to school here, and we're both from Alaska, so we wanted to come back and start a business and felt like Bozeman was just a great place to do it, and that cider was really taking off in 2010. We were able to buy a place downtown Bozeman, an old farmhouse with a dilapidated garage off of Main Street and full of weeds, and we fixed it up, mostly Glenn's sweat. And turned it into the cider house.
Can I ask what you were studying originally? Like, was it anything to do with agriculture or orcharding?
Well, my background is botany, and Glenn's background is nursing, and so his biochemistry has really come into play with the fermentation.
I began on the porch, like so I think probably a lot of people, you know, right. Being a home brewer, home fermenter, I think is the starting point for a lot of people. They think, okay, well, can I even, you know, fake it? And so I think that, you know, that's where it started. And then collaborating with other people that in the industry with experience. And then mm-hmm. I've always felt that the goal isn't to mimic others. It's mm-hmm. The goal is to create your own distinct fingerprint on your product. And so at the same time as gathering information and seeing how other people do it, for myself, I applied my experience, you know, as you, I don't know if you view these things this specific way, but with cider, it's a lot like a wound or in the sense of infection control. And growing, you know, creating an incubator that grows or heals the way you want to. So applying some of those, you know, in hospital practices mm-hmm. to cider production translated beautifully for me. And that's unique, mm-hmm. you know, and it also gives me a certain level of confidence that I think a lot of people don't have mm-hmm. in their process. And there's a tendency, I think, with most people, and this can be applied to a lot of different disciplines, but to over-treat rather than under, you know, under-treat. And so I have we're very gentle on our cider. We don't over-treat it. I think it shows. I mean, we're not manipulating it too much.
So you're from Alaska. What part of Alaska?
Palmer, Alaska, which is kind of the agricultural hub of Alaska. We're famous for growing giant cabbages and growing with short growing seasons, long daylight. So Montana is in many ways similar with the cold weather, but there's a lot of, I'd say, even additional challenges growing here.
Agriculture, this type of agriculture, fruit farming, is particularly difficult on the east side of the Rockies. Because the west side of the Rockies in Montana is more temperate.
Hmm. So what's the range of temperatures and what particular zone are you in?
I believe we're in zone 3.
Zone 3. Yep. Our orchard is located at a mile high. So we'll get frosts in June and frosts in September and, you know, 90 degrees in the summer. The sun's very intense. The wind is intense. So it's a real challenging growing environment, but the... it makes for some really tortured little fruits that have a lot of character and flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We enjoy what they commonly refer to as Great Northerners, right? These blasts of Arctic air that sweep down the continent. So that's the challenge in a nutshell. And that can come along at any time of the year and just devastate your crops.
We're learning a lot from the, you know, the old timers here. They've got these old trees that are here from the 1860s. Lots of old trees in the backyards of these old homestead farms. So there are trees that survive here and varieties that some of which don't even have names, but they make great cider.
Where we're at with our orchard, young orchard is narrowing down the varieties that have the right character and disposition to survive and thrive in these extreme conditions that are offered at a mile high and on the east side of the Rockies. And so these personalities start to present, you start to see what varieties are willing to work with you to produce the fruit. And yes, every year, so far, we lose a tremendous amount of buds because of these, surprise frosts and the like. So we're you know, really fighting with the elements to create a productive orchard.
Well, a little bit about like your history on this, like why cider? Because it's not necessarily the go-to for people who want to get into fermenting. Was there a particular fondness for apples and cider for you both?
I don't know. I kind of like to joke that Glenn made cider so I'd have something to drink.
Hmm. That's beautiful. what better reason than that, right? So was this, once you started drinking it, did your fondness increase? And let's also kind of talk about the locals around there. Although Boisman's like a really like happening area, as far as I understand, in Montana. But how do people relate to cider there?
I think generally, and maybe Anna can back me up on this, but there's a lot of health conscious people that have been motivated by similar experiences as Anna with a gluten intolerance. I think that in general, a lot of people end up with some belly aches as a result of their beer habits, and they start to strike out and try something else that's a gentle, easy drinking beverage. And I think cider fits in there. And then I think that, you know, as an American cultural trend, we've gone through a number of different iterations of developing our relationship with food, and one of those is broadening our palate, say maybe back to cider, just as an interest, as a point of interest, and the interest also of many people to engage in cider production and be creative. And so all of a sudden, I think that you have the perfect conditions right now or in the last 10 years to proliferate the industry and also the consumer, the customer base, and fulfill their interests. I think that's really, I think it's the kind of the consciousness of the American palate and as it develops.
Well, that might also speak to the area that you're in, too. I saw that there was a recent cover story on the city in Travel and Leisure and how it was just like the happening place to go to. It's like a foodie heaven. Would you agree to that as a profile of the city itself, where you're located? And that's primarily where your tasting room's located. Of course, the orchard's further away.
Right. So our tasting room is in downtown Bozeman, and I think something that's just really fun about the tasting room is it's all walks of life. We do have the people, the foodies and the travelers that come in and just love our cider. But we've also got the old ranchers from Big Timber make a special trip to come in and fill their growlers. We've got...
Right. They have a lot of nostalgia around those homestead orchards, you know. So they have a long-lasting relationship with apple trees. Mm-hmm. I think you were asking about Bozeman in general, in terms of the interest in food. And I think that that's true on a micro scale, because Bozeman's not really all that big, and in specific ways. But I think in general, there are a lot of people that are interested in mindfully crafted food, I would say. And so that extends to, you know, that's right, local farm to table type options, and also locally crafted cider and beer and all these things that make for a thriving, I think, food and beverage community, I guess.
What do you think people's misconception is about Montana? Do you find anything like that with travelers coming through, that they have one idea about Montana or Boisman itself, and then they're kind of like, aha, I didn't think of this? Is anything stand out there for you in that capacity?
Well, one thing I just hear over and over again is how friendly people are here. And I don't know that that's a surprise, but maybe the degree to which people are friendly and hospitable and helpful just floors people. I hear that over and over again.
That's lovely. Who doesn't want to hear that over and over again? That's perfect. If I stepped out of your tasting room, do I see buildings and then mountains on the other side of it? You know, like when you're in Alaska, that's what you see, right? Or I'm not sure the area you were from, but what is like a visual that we would see coming out of the tasting room?
Yeah. So if you stepped out of the tasting room, you'd first see our perennial wildflower garden and apple trees that we planted on the boulevard, which was a lovely replacement to the pile of weeds that were there before. And then beyond that, you'd see the old granary silo where the railroad used to come through and pick up wheat, I believe. And then beyond that, you'd see the Bridgers, the skyline of the Bridgers and the big M on the mountain for Montana State University and
rolling hills of wheat.
it's a beautiful setting, but we are just right there on off of Main Street, right at the end of Main Street. So it's
nestled between the Gallatin Mountains and the Bridger Mountains.
Beautiful. Wow. And what's the elevation of those mountains?
I think the tallest peaks float around 9,000 to 11,000 feet.
So that leads me to my next question. The name Lockhorn. Because, you know, that visually it has a certain kind of image to it of like elk coming together or cattle. Well, what is, how did you choose that as part of your branding?
Well, so I could tell you the whole story or we could just,
I'd love to hear the whole story.
Well, are we ready for the whole story? All right. The whole story is that when Anna and I were putting together the business on paper, planning, we, of course, you think about these names, and we have a family cabin in the Alaska Range, and it's 150 miles from a road. And it was in the winter, and I decided to fly out there. I invited a friend, and I decided, you know, en route to fly through the Kachatna Spires. And the Kachatna Spires, you should Google them, or however else you maybe DuckDuckGo them. and they're probably one of the most beautiful, or if not the most beautiful mountain range in North America. So, these spot 4,000 foot granite spires, and we're flying the little ragwing plane through them. And then we dropped in, we had to get under the clouds to get to the cabin, in these smaller foothills. There was a big pressure gradient, which led to a whole lot of wind. So I spent the next 20 minutes controlling the pitch and power of this small bush plane, trying to keep the wings from being torn off or being pushed into the trees or into the mountainside. And we made it safe and sound to the lake and landed on that beautiful, smooth snow and opened up the cabin, mixed the Manhattan and sat on the porch. And I have this long history of adventuring and, you know, near catastrophe, because that's what comes with the territory, right? Entering the unknown. Right. And so I'm sitting on the porch, and usually, you know, you don't reflect on these things. They're just part of the routine. If you are interested in the unknown and going out there and taking a look. So I'm sitting there, I think, man, this is a great, I've never done this before. I'm going to, you know, introspect on this. And it came to me, I realized that I just survived this thing that could have destroyed me and my friend. And I looked up in the eve, and we have these two bull moose that we found in the tundra that had gone through the rut, but had been stuck together. Their horns had stuck together while they were sparring. And of course that led to both of their ends. Hmm. And so they're hanging there in the eve. And I thought, you know, life is like this. It's this triumph and tragedy where you can't predict the outcome of your decisions. You make these decisions and you just get swept along the currents of life. And where you are deposited is just totally unpredictable. And so I thought, you know, these two moose were a perfect example of this. And so I thought Lockhorn was a great metaphor for taking these steps into the unknown and, you know, and the adventure of life. Wow. And then on the other hand, I think of the two animals as representing the same being, because in a sense they represent the duality of man and his inner struggle, so to speak. And so the two animals come together and they look at each other and they meet their fate together as one. So to me, it was very poetic.
Yeah. Wow. That's something for me to contemplate today, I tell you.
You got the longer version.
I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. And it makes total sense. And what a beautiful imagery. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, it also epitomizes the West, the frontier, the animals that we all love and enjoy. As naturalists, we spend a lot of time in nature. And we've also... Anna reminded me that we have those two bowl hung in the tasting room, as a centerpiece. So
we're get them apart, loaded into two different bush claims, put them down here, and then put them back together where they were locked.
Wow.
And put that on the wall. So it was an adventure.
That's quite a trial, actually, because antlers, they shrink when they dry out. And so they were even more bound, you know, after these ages of drying.
So often you see these bulls travel around in pairs, and then come rutting season, they start to spar.
Particularly when they're about the same size. Mm-hmm. So they'll be of the same generation, and they may even be twins. And they'll spend their entire life throughout the winter fighting off the wolves, surviving together just to be destroyed by each other. And it really is sad, but it is life, you know, and that's what makes life also beautiful, is the unknown.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're right on where, you know, secondary piece of becoming one being, which kind of relates back to the cider, doesn't it? You know, you could have this like blend of all these different properties, the people, all the hands that touched it, and maybe, you know, different trees that contributed to that one cider. And then it all comes down to, in that glass or in that bottle, you create this like perfect blend and unity of all those properties to, you know, make a magical drink.
Well, it sort of feeds into, I guess what our slogan is the apple's instinct untamed. And it just kind of reflects on that potential that's within the apple, that if you just allow it to do what it does naturally, it ferments into this beautiful cider and to express itself. And of course, that's also just a metaphor for ourselves and the potential within each of us, if we can just let it blossom and fruit and ferment, I guess.
A little bit of patience. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's go back to your orchard now. What's the distance between that? And can you give us a little idea of the orchard itself? What kind of soil you're working with and some of the varieties of trees that you have there?
So the orchard is about 25 minutes north of Bozeman. It's at the base of the Bridger Mountains, right under Ross Peak. And it's an old farming community. So it's got beautiful topsoil. I mean, it's probably
settled in
8 to 10 feet of beautiful black gold topsoil.
Wow.
Settled in the 1860s.
Wow.
Actually predates Bozeman. But the winds just howl out of there. So we do get some really severe winds. It's a beautiful location.
Huh. So you must be tying down your trees then with that, or are these older trees? It's, I think from some of the photos I saw, they were young, but what's
they're
the age?
They're young. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we began planting them 4 years ago with three-year-old rootstock. And the majority are trellised on dwarf rootstock, so they are tied to the trellis. Sometimes the winds are so severe, though, they snap. So we're working on that particular challenge. And then we've got about 250 full-size trees that we're working with.
So currently, is most of your cider being made from sourced apples and juice at this point?
Yes. The vast majority are coming from Washington. Okay. And then we're able to, we focus on pulling in some Montana fruit products, and of which we craft a Montana Macintosh cider from Heirloom Macintosh. And then we also craft a flathead cherry, and the flathead cherries are very, very, you know, popular in Montana. It's kind of one of the most well-known, I think it's the most well-known Montana fruit product.
Can you give us a little idea of what that cherry tastes like?
Well, I think that they're a delicious eating, fresh eating cherry. Mm-hmm. And so I'd say that they're wonderfully sweet. I'd say that they're also a bit tart. And I'd say that they're, you know, moderately complex in terms of tannin and in the skin, but they're delicious. And I do think that they're a little bit more, a more robust flavor than something like a Rainier.
Right. Mm-hmm. People who are familiar with flathead cherries can taste that distinct flavor. It's maybe a little bit more of a wine note to it.
Nice.
They have a very deep purple flesh.
Yeah, I have had some, so I was just kind of wondering what the locals, how you would describe it. And they're beautiful cherries. And so you're fermenting those into like a base juice?
We are. That's right. We're fermenting it into a base juice and then blending. And we've come up with a recipe that people respond to. And so that's where we're at with the seasonal flathead cherry.
Do you have a flagship cider? Do you know what I mean by that? One that everybody's like, oh, I got to always have this one. Or does it change? I know it could change by season.
Well, you know, interestingly, you know, and this is, you know, this speaks to responding to the customers. Mm-hmm. We craft a small batch cider every 2 weeks. And so, and we've been doing this for maybe 4 years. And we've become really honed in and organized about it over the last 2 to 3 years. And so every 2 weeks we just have a, you know, a knock it out of the park blend, or specific, you know, fruit, cider, and one that just, the customer base responded to wildly is this grapefruit and mint blend cider. And so I'd say that, you know, we're proud of all of our ciders, but the one cider that I would, you know, based on your description of a flag, that would meet that description would be this grapefruit mint. People just love it. And it's so refreshing, and it just meets, you know, it really, really fits that summertime on the river. You know, fishing on the river is very popular in Montana. Mm-hmm. And, but I think that it also is a delight all four seasons. So I think I'd say that's the most popular. It just is wildly successful.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Like grapefruit and mint with the apple. And, you know, you, it's almost like you can't make up that stuff, but yet you did. And here it is, you know?
Well, and you go through the whole process of using fresh mint and, you know, you can taste the quality, and people respond to it. We craft another popular one. It's like a cider mint mojito. And I think those backyard mint leaves go to the smaller batches more frequently to the grapefruit mint. And that's because it's a high volume demand, you know, production and large volume for us, you know, this is all relative.
Right. And you also have food at the cidery too.
Yeah, we have a very small space and a very small gluten-free dedicated kitchen where we do cheese and salami boards with locally crafted cheeses and salamis as much as we can. We make our own hummus and pickles. And
Bozeman is very fortunate for all these young entrepreneurs that have an interest in traditional food and food production, and included in that is, you know, charcuterie. Mm-hmm. And so there is a local fella and he's cranking out wonderful sausages, dry cured. And it does, it creates that, that opportunity for us and to reinvest in the local economy and these people that are doing, clever, ingenious, wonderful things with their time through business.
Actually making one in the next few weeks that's got our bone dry cider in it. So that'll be really fun to see how that turns out.
Wow. Into the actual, the
into
sausage?
Into the dry cured salami.
Wow. Yep. Wow. Fantastic. Because Montana is a big cattle area. So is that
absolutely true?
Right?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. So charcuterie just like absolutely makes sense. I mean, again, you can't get much more local than that. Fantastic.
Oh, that's right. And it really is fun to work. So many businesses work together and it just kind of goes back to that whole keep it local, keep the change kind of mentality.
So you have this really popular cider with the grapefruit mint profile. How would you define your cidery overall? Is it a modern cidery? If you're sourcing juice right now from out of state and yet you have the ambient, you know, yeast kind of like always working along with your scene. So there's that element of Montana, no doubt. Is it modern with a mix of more heirloom?
I'd say we lean, and really this is a function of the business where it stands today. So earlier you were going to ask about barrel aged. We've dabbled in barrel, but we haven't really committed a lot of energy to it because we just don't have the space. And so yeah, I think the question you're asking is a tough one because we, given more space as we grow, we'll put more effort into traditional, you know, European style cider production. But right now, you know, threading that needle with the American palate is more important. So it's important to set the hook with the customer and provide them what they expect and what they want from a cider. And we have a limit there, actually, because as you know, I think what I widely hear is that the American palate responds to sweet ciders. Well, we've drawn a very absolute line in the sand in terms of residual sugar, and we've branded ourselves as a dry cider. And even the sweeter ciders that we do produce, I think land on the dry spectrum. So it's an interesting thing, but in that respect, but to answer that broader question, we look forward to developing more of our traditional cider offering into the future. Yeah.
Well, you're the only cidery in Bozeman currently, right? So this must be a level of education that you are constantly doing with new folks coming in the door. Is that true?
Yeah, we've always got people coming in who've never tried cider before. And so the question becomes, well, you know, do you tend to like the more dry or the more sweet, and here, try this. And then you kind of narrow into what their palate likes. And fortunately we've got 12 to 14 ciders on tap at any given time. So we can kind of narrow in to what people like. Just this clean, crisp, not overly sweet style. It's just apples and yeast. We don't add any sugars. We don't add any sulfites or chemical stabilizers. And people can really taste that. They respond to it and they, come back and say, gosh, I can actually drink this and feel okay the next day. You know, sort of what we thought would be our flagship cider is actually called our bone dry cider. And so that is.
And it is.
Completely
it's the
dry.
Second, it's mm-hmm. the second most popular cider. So
Oh, wow.
Our bone dry is the second most popular. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then even what we call kind of a semi-sweet, I would still say is a semi-dry. I don't know that we have any that are.
So and when we say dry, we're referring not to the sense on the palate. We're referring strictly to residual sugar. Right. So we're fermenting completely dry. And as you know, depending on your choices of you know, yeast and your fermentation style, you can kind of preserve some of those sweet notes without mm-hmm. having sugar, residual mm-hmm. sugar. Mm-hmm. And so the yeast that we use, I think a primary yeast we use, I think really does a great job of preserving fruit forward notes mm-hmm. and the sense of sweetness.
I'm enjoying hearing from the Montana cider makers as they describe their landscape, you know, being surrounded by like six different mountain ranges in Boisman is just outstanding. Being next to a national park like Yellowstone, Montana has it going on. And the fact that there's all these old homestead apple orchards, just, you know, your imagination, just for me, I kind of romanticize it. I can't help it because that's why I'm podcasting, you know. I just see what it must be like for these folks living there and the history that is involved is absolutely incredible. And how cool that here are the folks, the Deal family, down from Alaska, living in Montana, and really working all systems, having a living roof, providing a sanctuary for folks who, you know, can't necessarily be eating any kind of gluten-based products. It's just so cool. I love it. And I have spent time in Montana. It was many, many years ago, kind of a different lifetime when I was doing a lot of major backcountry hiking and stuff. I was actually on a previous honeymoon. I've had two honeymoons in my life. Anyways, we were on our honeymoon, did a big trip out to Banff, and we're cruising down from British Columbia and crossed over into Montana via the Glacier National Park. It's like the International Peace Park, and did some backcountry hiking there because that's what you do you know, when you're hiking on your honeymoon. Didn't do that on my last honeymoon, I'll tell you that. Anyways, you know, going into that area was just outstanding, and it just feels so long ago. So I am absolutely thrilled to the moon to be able to speak to these folks, and it's inspiring me to head out to Montana, and I hope that's true for you. So once again, if you want a taste of Montana, and of course, Idaho next door is really an area that I haven't explored much, but you know, this is a part of the world that is worth checking out because visually it just fills up your heart. It does. And that's what life's about, is filling up your heart and filling your glass. So don't forget to check out the Northwest Cider Club, what the boxes that they're offering in this last quarter of 2021, where you could get some excellent cider in both the Discover box and the Elevated box. And yeah. So that's, once again, nwciderclub.com/podcast. Next week is episode 295, which means we are four episodes away from 300. 300 episodes of archived material all on cider around the world. It's just fantastic in my mind. So I'm still trying to catch up and then like put it into perspective. So we're going to roll back in just a moment here to season one. Once again, a little intro where I was working with the Talking Palms. You're going to hear from both the Medlars, who really got a gangster voice here.
That was fun.
I know, Medlars, you knocked it out of the park. And Mr. Quince. Oh, Mr. Quince, anything you want to add?
No, I was just clearing my throat.
Okay. The conversation was all on prohibition happening in Vermont. So they want to do a little bit of a fun play on the gangsters back then running from the cops. So that's what you're going to hear. It was so much fun setting this up. And yeah, just kind of reminisce about that time. You know, at that point, when you're going to hear this, I was only 34 episodes into Cider Chat. Let's roll with this right now and just reminisce back once again to season 6, posted on June 8th of that year.
Hi, this is Adam Krakowski, author of Vermont Prohibition, Teetotalers, Bootleggers, and Corruption, a new book focusing on the history of Prohibition and the effects it had on the state of Vermont. And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Don't ever think twice about looking in the granite quarry for us.
Don't look up until you hear them passing.
Goodbye, coppers. Hello, cider.
Prohibition.
Episode 34. Oh my goodness, I just love how the Medlars are like, you know, goodbye, coppers. Hello, cider. And Mr. Quince, when you said don't look up until they pass by, I think you're referring to the fact that, you know, sometimes your eyeballs can be reflected in the headlights a little bit, so keep on looking down. That's what you meant, right?
Yes, I did.
Well, obviously, Quints are very good at hiding in plain sight, which is why we are still discovering so many amazing little Quince bushes and trees in backyards that have been hidden for so many years.
If you want us, you got to find us.
That's Mr. Quince. That is exactly right. Okay, well, what can I say? We'll see you all next week. And with that, we're going to leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller and the Talking Palms. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason.
We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!